From London, BBC Caribbean Report.
OAS representatives wait to see if the United States will sign a plan to step up the drug war. There's growing American support for the removal of a U.S. military base in Vieques, Puerto Rico, and an ECLAC study shows that Caribbean women are losing ground. I'm Jessica Robertson, and this is BBC Caribbean Report. The annual meeting of the Inter-American Commission on Drug Abuse and Control is trying to finalize plans for an independent national drug assessment program. The meeting, taking place in Uruguay, is expected to consolidate a decision taken earlier by the majority of members of the Organization of American States. I spoke earlier with Antigua and Barbuda's ambassador to the OAS and the United States, Lionel Hurst. I began by asking him whether this evaluation mechanism will set the standard for all anti-drug efforts by member states.
Essentially, each of us will be tested by the exact same standard, and as a consequence, we will then be able to determine which states are or which states are not providing the kind of help which is necessary in order to eliminate the drug problem.
What difference will it make, though, if the U.S. maintains its own decertification system?
Our hope is that the multilateral evaluation mechanism which we are working out here will, in fact, become a far more acceptable standard, and that U.S. citizens will see that what their government does creates enemies for the United States without attacking the base of the problem, while, in fact, this multilateral evaluation mechanism will provide such a common standard for everyone to be measured against that there would hardly be any need for the United States to continue to do what it does in the hemisphere.
But this system does say that each country is to be trusted. Who's going to check on whether or not it's working?
After we have provided the answers, as it were, to the 61 questions, experts from each of our countries will gather in Washington or in some other capital within the hemisphere, and they will pore over the answers provided by member states. They will also be able to ask questions of the experts from the states from which the particular questionnaires would have come.
So that's the next step, but where does the new arrangement go from there?
Well, our hope is that once it is off the ground and running and we see how it works, that states will then be very cooperative, will provide resources so that the Inter-American Commission on Drug Abuse and Control can do its job well, and also that it will begin to eliminate the need for the U.S. to issue this decertification device every year as it now does. If that is done, I believe that it will help a great deal in moving forward in solving the problem of drug trafficking in our hemisphere. And clearly, the question of demand must also be placed on the table. And in that regard, several of the questions point to demand and what is being done about reducing demand. So in a way, it is a very comprehensive questionnaire that will be sent out to member states. And the results are undoubtedly, we think, will have an impact, much like we intended to have. Our hope is that by having the multilateral evaluation mechanism placed alongside the U.S. decertification device, that the disparity in the conclusions will be so very evident that it will embarrass the United States into removing the politically motivated decertification device which it now uses.
Antigua and Barbuda's OAS ambassador, Lionel Hurst. And the latest figures released by the U.S. Coast Guard show that they seized nearly 60,000 kilos of cocaine in the last fiscal year, with a record street value just under $4 billion. The amount represents an increase of 35% over last year. Federal states, from some Twin Island republics of the Caribbean to the USA, will be meeting in Montreal, Canada, to discuss issues linked to federalism. The three-day conference opens tomorrow. This report from Anthony Germain in Montreal.
There are two key political representatives from the Caribbean at this conference. They are Denzel Douglas, the Prime Minister of St. Kitts and Nevis, and the Premier of Nevis, Vance Amory. Along with the President of the United States, political leaders and bureaucrats from 24 other countries are here to discuss several political and policy issues confronting Federalist nations. The co-chair of the conference is Bob Rae, a former Canadian provincial premier.
We have a desire to create a place that people can meet informally, and in some depth to see that the problems that they face in their own countries are not necessarily unique to them, but indeed are part of a wider shared experience.
That shared experience means this conference will include discussions about social policy and debates about how to manage linguistic and racial diversity. Another key topic deals with how provinces and internal states interrelate with their central governments, how they collect taxes, and how they spend them. Canadian Prime Minister Jean Chrétien opens the Federalism Conference. One of the significant events will be a 45-minute closing speech by American President Bill Clinton. For BBC Caribbean Report, I'm Anthony Germain at the International Conference on Federalism near Montreal.
Guyana's Foreign Affairs Ministry has responded to weekend statements from Venezuela, raising once again Caracas' claim to the Essequibo region. A statement said Guyana continues to uphold its position in the face of the controversy caused by Venezuela's contention that the awarding of the area to Guyana was null and void. The statement from Venezuela re-sparked a 100-year-old disagreement between the two countries over who owns one of the most mineral-rich areas in South America. A Venezuelan spokesman told BBC Caribbean Report today that the statement from Caracas had been aimed at putting all the facts in the public domain. The spokesman said that Venezuela would continue to discuss the issue through United Nations mediation. The Puerto Rican lobby to rid the island of Vieques of its U.S. naval base is gathering more steam. Congressman Lincoln Diaz-Balart added his support on Monday. Now another person championing the cause is Dominican-born New York City Councilman Guillermo Linares, who visited Vieques recently. I spoke with him at New York City Hall earlier about the range of American and Puerto Rican support for the American military base to move.
I think that this is something that requires both Democratic and Republican legislators of goodwill that acknowledge that if there is a need for national security to have continued practice for the U.S. Navy, then let's look for an alternative site that will be acceptable and to which there will be no harm done to human beings and to the environment for which the people of Vieques, which is, this is a human tragedy that is happening with Vieques, and their beautiful island would not continue to be destroyed. And also the fact that the United States need to invest in restoring the island of Vieques because it has been destroyed.
How hopeful are you that the Puerto Rican government and its people will get the Pentagon to close the base, which, according to military...
I am very hopeful. Let me tell you, I had never seen the type of unity among Puerto Rican people as I observed in my trip when I went down there and as I have observed of the Puerto Rican community in the United States as well. You would never see under the same roof the different political parties coming together, rallying and unifying around a goal such as the one that caused the United States to get out of Vieques. And that is the case now. This is a new day for the people of Puerto Rico, and I think that they will rally and get the support, both in the United States and international support, to really rectify this tragedy for the people of Vieques that happen to be United States citizen as well.
That was New York City Councilman Guillermo Linares. You're listening to BBC Caribbean Report. A survey looking at women in Caribbean society shows a decline in many political and other gains made in the past. The report was presented at the Economic Commission for Latin America and the Caribbean Conference on Women taking place in Trinidad. It looked at how women have fared since the International Women's Conference in Beijing in 1995. Attorney Roberta Clark told today's conference in Puerto Spain about the figures for abuse of women and children in the last 4 years.
With respect to violence against the girl child, there's a significant underreporting of incidents of incest and other forms of sexual abuse against the girl child. Still, the little that is documented presents a picture of female vulnerability to violence. A 1994 research study done in Jamaica revealed that 17% of a random sample of 452 primary school girls ages 13 to 14 had experienced attempted or completed rape, half before the age of 12.
Roberta Clark also outlined how even political gains made by women appear to be receding.
So, for example, in Barbados, in Antigua and Barbuda, it has been reported that no woman has ever been elected to Parliament there still, even though the speakers of the lower house and the upper house are women. The Jamaica report isolates analytically a number of explanatory factors for this, for the low level of women's participation in Parliament, and I think that those explanations apply equally throughout the Caribbean. The first one, the structure of political parties where men dominate and control patronage. Second, women are usually given constituencies where they're unlikely to be successful. C, financial constraints for female candidates. Candidates usually have to raise their own money. Women have children to support. Four, competing claims on time in the situation where the woman is the primary nurturer in her household. If women's participation in the political process as candidates is not steadily increasing, the reverse is the case for women's presence in public administration as senior managers. So here's the good news. In Trinidad and Tobago, 45% of all permanent secretaries are reported to be women, 27% in Dominica, 27% in Dominica, but the figure is as high as 81% at the next level under permanent secretary in Dominica. 50% in Jamaica are female, 54% in Grenada.
That was attorney Roberta Clark speaking from Trinidad. In the Bahamas, tents are being brought in to house the displaced community, mostly Haitian immigrants, on the island of Abaco. This follows damage caused by Hurricane Floyd. As Debbie Nash reports, the damage assessment is also focusing attention on the possible numbers of illegal immigrants, Haitian immigrants, in the Bahamas.
When Bahamas Prime Minister Hubert Ingraham announced that in reference to the rebuilding of hurricane-ravaged communities in the island of Abaco, that there would be no apartheid, he referred to a considerable Haitian presence on that island, now homeless for over 3 weeks. On Monday, the Ministry of Works, as well as the Ministry of Social Services, completed their house-to-house survey of hurricane-damaged areas needing help. The Prime Minister announced on national television Monday night that 200 tents would be flown into Abaco by the U.S. military, arriving Thursday near the former predominantly Haitian communities called Pigeon Pea and the Mud. Displaced residents will live in the tents, using bathroom facilities at a nearby school until they can move into other accommodations. At the Bahamas Ministry of Housing, Permanent Secretary Cresswell Stirrup says government is fast-forwarding a pre-hurricane plan subdivision on Abaco, consisting of 600 property lots. Affordable housing is within his ministry's competence, he says, adding that includes, where necessary, government subsidies for permanent housing at the new subdivision. But to whom this housing will be afforded raises the issue of whether some Haitian residents may be illegal squatters on government land. Teresa Butler, permanent secretary at the Prime Minister's office, says other Bahamians not of Haitian extraction had also lived in the two severely depressed and low-lying areas which had not been properly serviced by public utilities. She says many of these residents were gainfully employed before the hurricane. Director of Immigration Melvin Seymour is curious as to why so much attention has been focused on just one nationality. This is Debbie Nash in Nassau for BBC Caribbean Report.
Trinidad-born regional economist Frank Rampersad has died at the age of 69. Frank Rampersad served in many senior national and regional posts. These included his time as permanent secretary to three Trinidadian finance ministers, from Eric Williams to George Chambers, as chairman of the national airline, BWIA, and chairman of the state sugar company, Caroni Limited. On a regional footing, Frank Rampersad served with the West Indian Commission in London, the Regional Time for Action team, and the Commonwealth Secretariat. One of the first to issue a statement today was former Commonwealth Secretary General Sir Sridath Ramphal.
Within the Caribbean, of course, Frank has given service of very great quality and commitment to UWI, right up to his very last days. Frank Rampersad has made a contribution of incomparable worth, which I know will continue to assist our many efforts for years and years to come, but most of all, perhaps to inspire a wholly new generation to the standards which he set and, of course, from which he never faltered. The Caribbean has lost a very great son. We are all the poorer. But we must memorialize him by our steadfastness to the virtues that shaped his life.
That was Sir Sridath Ramphal. That's it for BBC Caribbean Report. I'm Jessica Robertson, saying goodbye from London.